We've been following a really tragic case in Tallahassee, Florida, the case of Rachel Hoffman. You may have caught it on ABC News' 2020. Just as a brief recap, Rachel Hoffman was a 23-year-old woman, college student, recent college graduate in Florida, who was a minor marijuana user and sold a bit to her friends. Police arrested her and used her as bait in a drug sting that went horribly wrong, and she ended up losing her life. And so there's some new updates, and joining us here to talk about that is Normal's Deputy Director, Paul Armentano. Paul, welcome back to The Stash.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, I guess the biggest update we need to get to is the grand jury coming back with their review of this case. Let our listeners know what the grand jury had to say about this.
Well, yeah, you're right. In arguably the biggest news to come out of this case in the last couple days, a 15-member grand jury did come back on Friday, and they found five members of the Tallahassee Police Department, one investigator and four supervisors, to have been negligent in contributing to the death of Rachel Hoffman. They found them negligent in their signing off on this dubious sting operation, and they were also negligent in their failure to properly monitor Rachel as she underwent this sting operation.
Yeah, even one of the grand jurors went and wrote some pretty telling text here about how they felt about this case. They say less than 15 minutes after she drove away from the offices of the Tallahassee Police Department, she drove out of sight of the officers who assured her they would be right on top of her, watching and listening the whole time. She cried out for help as she was shot and killed, and nobody was there to hear her. Is this type of editorializing something you would typically find in a grand jury report?
You know, the grand jury is clearly here trying to make a statement, and just to for the edification of the listeners, you know, grand juries are convened all the time. I believe in this case, the state prosecutor, who really does deserve a lot of credit in this case, William Meigs, has really been taking on the TPD on this issue. And I believe that because there was a death of an informant, automatically a grand jury would be convened. But there's no legal weight to these findings. There is a lot of moral weight, and I really do think because of the scathing language that was used by this jury, they were really trying to send a message to the public and to the TPD that they were gravely in error. And certainly one would think that if the parents of Rachel Hoffman do decide at some point down the road to file some sort of wrongful death claim, for instance, against the Tallahassee Police Department, the findings of this grand jury would certainly bolster their case.
Yeah, I would think so. And this prosecutor, Willie Meigs, out there in Florida, he's been reacting pretty strongly to the DEA. We had an update on that as well, where he was refusing to prosecute DEA-involved cases. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, this is really a strange twist. You know, after the grand jury on Friday came back with these findings, the TPD did suspend with pay, I might add, five of the officers that were found to be negligent. I want to highlight, actually, or one of these supervisors, this Lieutenant White, who the grand jury of the five, they came down on her the hardest, and certainly with good reason. This was the supervisor who actually signed off on the operation plan, this idea that Rachel would go and meet these two individuals and make this outrageous buy of a handgun and 1,500 ecstasy pills and 2 ounces of crack cocaine. She admitted to the grand jury that even though she approved this operation plan, she had actually never read it. So essentially, she just simply rubber-stamped this plan and didn't know what it was. She also was the supervisor on duty that night that was supposed to be closely monitoring Rachel's audio transmissions, because Rachel Hoffman was, in fact, wearing a wire when she went to meet these two Tallahassee drug dealers. But once again, under oath, Supervisor White admitted to the grand jury that, in fact, she was distracted that night because she was also performing an audit, and she really wasn't closely listening to the transmissions that Rachel was sending back to the police department. So here, and I should also mention that this is actually the fifth time since 1999 Lieutenant White has been under investigation by Internal Affairs for improper conduct. I would also mention she's only been in vice for 3 months prior to signing off on this operation. So while there's certainly blame to go around in this case to a whole number of people, the grand jury, I do think, very properly identified this supervisor in particular as arguably being the most negligent in costing Rachel Hoffman her life. Regarding what you said about the DEA, I should note that rather than apologizing for his department's abhorrent performance in this case, Police Chief Jones, following the grand jury's findings, rather than apologize, has really tried to go on the offensive. And the way he has done that is to claim that, in fact, Rachel was a very high-profile drug dealer who was under investigation by the DEA and, in fact, was selling up to $2 million worth of marijuana a year out of her one-bedroom home. Now, this is a very interesting accusation to have, you know, made after the fact, by the police chief, because they never made these sort of claims prior to last Friday, prior to the grand jury coming back. And in fact, there doesn't seem to be any hard evidence that Rachel Hoffman was any more than a small-time marijuana user in a college town who sometimes shared marijuana with her friends. But after these accusations were made, State Prosecutor Willie Meg said, well then, I want to hear from the DEA. You say they were investigating her. I want the DEA here. I want them to talk before the grand jury. I want them to tell the grand jury what you claim they know. Not surprisingly, the DEA did not come to testify before the grand jury. And as a result, the state attorney's office in Florida says that he will not work with the DEA in any future cases.
Wow, it's really rare to see these different echelons of law enforcement and prosecution kind of fighting against each other in a case like this, isn't it?
Yes, it's very rare, and it's very rare to see a state prosecutor stand up and basically go after one of their own. But clearly, Willie Meggs is doing it in this case, arguably because the conduct was so egregious on the part of the Tallahassee Police Department, that if, you know, Police Chief Jones is looking for some sort of a life raft to be seized from the state attorney's office, you know, he's not going to get it from Willie Meg.
Yeah, and the other thing that just doesn't pass the smell test here for me, you know, first of all, the idea that, oh, she was selling 10 to 15 pounds of marijuana a week, so that means she deserved to die? I mean, the amount to me sounds, you know, wouldn't really matter what amount she was dealing. She didn't deserve to die. But this idea that, you know, that she was selling $35,000 a week is what they're trying to say here, as what she was selling. And when they busted her house, they only found 5 ounces of pot and a ledger where she recorded her sales. Wouldn't they just look at the ledger? I mean, isn't that the evidence that would say how much she was dealing?
Well, Russ, it's even more absurd than that. You know, this was a girl who, you know, her father was paying most of her expenses. Her father was paying her auto insurance. Her father was paying the rent on her car. Her father was paying her cell phone bill. And while, you know, there might be some people that can argue whether, you know, a girl's father at age 23 should still be covering these sort of expenses, that aside, the bottom line is, you know, if this woman was making this $1.8 million a year allegedly from selling pot, where's the money?
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be any secret bank account. And in fact, there are records that her family was the one who paid her bills because Rachel Hoffman typically did not have a lot of money to her name. The other, you know, notion that's just absurd about this whole idea, and as I said, these claims that suddenly Rachel Hoffman was one of the biggest drug dealers in Tallahassee have all come after the fact, and specifically they've come after the grand jury found the Tallahassee Police Department negligible in her death. Think about this. If the police came in and busted this girl, who, as they noted earlier, did have a prior marijuana possession offense, was in fact enrolled in drug court, if the police came into her home with evidence that she was selling $35,000 a week of marijuana from her home, do you think they would have simply cut a deal with her and not filed any charges? I mean, it's absurd to think that the Tallahassee Police Department would have found evidence indicating that Rachel Hoffman was a high-profile drug dealer and not even have arrested her for these charges, but instead would have cut a deal with her to have her turn into a confidential informant. And there again, if they really did believe that Rachel Hoffman was connected to individuals pushing very large quantities of marijuana, why, as a confidential informant, did the Tallahassee Police Department not ask Rachel to turn in her supplier?
Yeah, why turn to the other two?
Know, instead, the testimony says that, in fact, the TPD initially asked Rachel to simply give them the names of some of her small-time friends that she shared marijuana with. And when she refused to do that, then they began going on a fishing expedition to try and see, you know, what drug dealers in town they could set up Rachel to make a buy from. And when they did select the two individuals that killed her, these were two individuals that Rachel didn't even know. She didn't have a prior relationship with them. Once again, it is unfathomable to think that the Tallahassee Police Department would have behaved this way if they legitimately had evidence that Rachel was a major drug dealer and, in fact, had a supplier up the chain. That's who they would have gone after if they would have used her as a confidential informant. But either the way, they certainly still would have arrested her and booked her before trying to cut any deal.
Yeah, the story gets worse and worse the more the details that come out about it. And I think the thing that probably upsets me the most about it is them being suspended with pay. It's like a nice little vacation.
Yeah, and, you know, having followed these sort of stories for some time, you know, you get jaded. And, you know, any time I hear that the police officer will be investigated by Internal Affairs, or any time you hear that the police department is performing their own internal investigation, you know, you kind of roll your eyes, because what generally happens is while the investigation's pending, the officers in question get a nice little paid vacation, and then, you know, a few months later, Internal Affairs comes back and they find that, in fact, the officers didn't do anything wrong and they go back to their job. You see this over and over again. Fortunately, in this case, I think there may be some slightly different outcomes simply because of how much publicity it's garnered and because of the fact that Rachel's parents, to their credit, have taken their case to the state legislature. There was a bill filed, I believe last week, a claims bill in the Florida legislature that seeks to financially compensate the parents of Rachel Hoffman due to the negligence of the Tallahassee Police Department. There's also a bill that Rachel's father is arguing in favor of that would change the way police in Florida do business with confidential informants. For instance, one change that this proposal would make would be that no suspect could begin working undercover for the police without first having met with legal counsel and discussed this sort of deal with legal counsel. In the case of Rachel Hoffman, one of many abhorrent facts in this case is that when the Tallahassee Police Department asked Rachel to become an informant, they instructed her specifically that she was not to discuss this deal with anyone, including her own attorney. And, of course, they argued for that because I'm sure the Tallahassee Police Department were aware that had Rachel discussed this with her attorney would have said this is a terrible idea and don't do it. So, in fact, this bill, this so-called Rachel's Law, before the legislature, would make certain changes so that other people's sons and daughters can't be used as cannon fodder for the police department when they try to engage in these war on drugs sting operations.
We'll keep an eye out on this story and keep everyone updated as it goes along. You can check out the Stash blog at stash.normal.org/tag/Rachel-Hoffman. You'll catch all the stories that we've done since this story first broke. And Paul, I understand you've got an article coming out on this. Where can people find that?
Well, I've been doing quite a bit of writing on this case. If they go to alternate.org and in the search box either type my name or type in the name Rachel Hoffman, they'll see about a 700-word piece I had on this about a couple weeks ago. And just today I was turning in copies for a 2,500-word feature story on this case and the latest developments in it that's slated to appear in Cannabis Culture. If people also want to check out a very good political publication known as the Cold Type Reader, which I believe is at coldtype.net, they can also download an article that I have on this case as well.
All right. Paul Armentano is the deputy director of Normal and doing yeoman's work here tracking the case of Rachel Hoffman. Paul, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Russ.